Broadcast out of New York City, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health on the Progressive Radio Network on Monday, April 1st, 2013. I'm Dr. Len Sabuto, and Vicky's back.
And happy April Fool's Day.
I really am back.
We're not fooling.
It's not a trick. That's right.
Well, thank you for joining us on Prescriptions for Health on the Progressive Radio Network. Now, the first and third Monday of every month, live from 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time and from 7 to 8 a.m. Pacific Time. And remember that our shows are available 24/7 on prn.fm and drsaputo.com.
Today, you're going to hear Vicky's 2020 health tips at 20 after and 20 to the hour. And we got another great show for you today that's going to include why the truth about GMO foods is even more frightening than you ever imagined.
And should mammograms be used to screen for breast cancer in anyone?
Should cognitive enhancing drugs be given to our kids to make them get better grades?
And what's the best way to manage cartilage tears?
And what about the optimal pre-surgical diet?
Well, I am back, and you know, it was my birthday. It was a big birthday, and I...
You're 39 again.
Yeah, 39 again, and I had time to kind of reflect on my life.
Mm.
And I started reflecting on my life, first of all, because I got sick, and so I was in bed lying there thinking about...
So what else is
thinking
there to
about
do
things. And then I went to Alaska to visit my son, Kevin, who's a wildlife biologist. And he, one of the things that he studies is moose, and he tracks them and captures them and examines them and makes sure that they're okay and everything, and then releases them again back into the wild. So I thought it would be really fun to go to Alaska and visit Kevin and see what he really does and to tag along with him.
Well, so you tracked a moose. You didn't go moose hunting.
No, I didn't go moose hunting.
No, you love moose, don't you?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, it was really a thrill to do it. It was kind of a rush to do the whole thing because they're huge wild animals, you know. And the one that we captured had a couple of calves that were encircling us the whole time, which made me a little bit uncomfortable. But
they're only about 400 pounds, those calves, right?
Oh, no, they were more than that.
The calves were?
Well, they were 9 months old.
Oh, okay, so they're big.
I mean,
calves.
I didn't weigh them, but...
You could tell they were bigger than you.
They were too big, and they have very long legs.
Uh-huh.
But anyway... After I got done with all that and I had some quiet time in Juneau, you know, it snowed, which is very quiet and peaceful and so forth. And I had time to just think and about how much I really needed this vacation and needed to just get away because we work too hard.
Yeah, we do.
You know, we do too much. And we're always talking to other people about stress reduction.
Quality of life.
Relaxing. Yeah, all that kind of stuff. So we've decided that we're going to take our own advice. We did a reality check, and we're going to be cutting back on our shows. So we're going to be doing Prescriptions for Health every other Monday.
And the first
so
and
that'll
third
be
Mondays
the first,
of the month.
Yeah, first and third of the month. So quality in life is pretty important, and we want to practice what we preach.
I also learned I really miss you.
I mean,
that was a long time to be gone. You were gone about 9 days. And so welcome back. I love the picture that you sent back. It gave people the wrong idea, though. It was such a beautiful picture that I had it blown up for you, but also posted it on Facebook. It was a mistake because people were calling you almost a moose killer. And here's this picture of you with the moose got a tag in its ear and a caption that says, moose tracking. But you're holding the dart gun, the rifle that shoots out the dart.
Well, that was supposed to be a joke.
I know. And you're hugging the moose. So I finally just took it down. I figured, what the heck? But it was a great photo.
Yeah, no, we were loving the moose.
Absolutely.
Okay. You know, the talk about genetically engineered foods continues. And how is it that Obama just signed what's now being called the Monsanto Protection Act, allowing harm to us, our farmers, the environment? Corporations are taking over our government. So let's talk about what this Monsanto Protection Act is. What does this mean?
First of all, it's not called that. And it's part of what's happened with the sequestration business. And what does sequestration mean? It means that if the houses of Congress can't come up with a decision about how we should be spending and appropriate spending for the year, then we don't have a budget. And the government basically can't pay itself and we go broke. And so there was an interest in obviously solving that problem, because otherwise there's just straight cuts across the board, which a lot of the time don't make any sense. So smuggled in this bill is something that's terrible. And a lot of people have called it the Monsanto Protection Act, even though it's not labeled that way. And because basically what it's doing is it's giving Monsanto the ability to override the U.S. federal courts on the issue of planting experimental GE crops.
Well, why would the government give up governmental power to a corporation like that that could be poisoning and killing us and our environment?
Well, there you go being logical again. I agree with you.
It's just absolutely crazy.
Well,
this
things
really
like this happen all
me.
The time. I mean, look at the Affordable Care Act.
But okay, I mean, too, we would have no power to stop GMO from being sold or planted
no matter what happens. That's right. Well, that's obviously outrageous, and it's why it's being called the Monsanto Protection Act, because that's what it's
protecting
doing.
Monsanto.
Them and other companies that could do things like that. And it's the wrong thing to do. But it's no different than what the government's been doing a long time. I mean, look at the Affordable Care Act. When that passed, nobody even understood what it was. They only had a few days to review it. I don't know who wrote the thing, but it's turning out to have all the kinds of things that I thought would go, and you thought would go wrong, going wrong. And now we have this other business of how to write a sequestration bill that protects us from locking all the finances of the government. And it's turning out to have things inserted in it that we had no idea about. So this is just a sign of how the government is doing terrible things. And you and I are just going along for the ride because we don't do anything about it.
Well, it's really scary. And you know, the other thing that just blows my mind is how the labeling of GMOs didn't pass. That there are genetically engineered organisms that are in our foods, and people didn't want to know that.
Well,
and 62 other countries require the labeling of GMOs. What is the matter with the United States?
Well, it's about money, Vicki, and it's about political promises, and it's things that are done in a back room someplace. And they say, you do this for me and I'll do that for you.
But all the money that was and all the money that was spent, I guess, on doing the ads to make people think. I don't know why people didn't vote to label it.
Well,
why don't people want to know what's in their food?
Well, they had people like doctors saying, oh, it's not a problem. You should vote for it because it's a good thing. And those doctors either were uninformed about what that means, or they're just taking money and run.
Yeah, they were paid a lot to do the commercials.
Well, probably they were. I mean, but it is a terrible thing. And now we're finding out some of the terrible things about it. And we're taking some action. But just a couple of things to talk about here that have to do with what's wrong with this act. Well, first of all, it's what Vicki said, and that's it keeps the federal courts from having the ability to halt the sale of planting of controversial genetically modified foods, no matter what happens, whether it kills the population or not. Secondly, it was written apparently in collusion with Monsanto. I mean, how crazy can this get? And then they're looking at some of the members of Congress that didn't even know that this thing was in the act. It's sort of like looking at the Affordable Care Act and saying, well, do you really know what's in this bill, Congressperson? The answer was no. And then fourth, the president did nothing. I mean, he must have understood what was going on, but he let it go after he specifically said he would never do such a thing. He did.
Well, the other thing is that regulators have been approving these GMOs for 20 years without doing research on their safety.
Well, that's right.
And so let's talk about the hidden viral gene, gene 6, that regulators have ignored. That, you know, how they knew it was there, but nobody tested it or monitored
All right,
it.
So,
why
so,
did that happen?
So what you're saying is that when you make a GMO crop, you're inserting new DNA, okay, into the genes so that you can get a different kind of effect from the gene. So maybe it will be able to withstand more pesticide. Maybe it'll have a better color red for the tomato. I mean, there are lots of things that they can do that seem like a good idea on the surface. But what's turned out here is that of the 86 different GMO foods that we have, 54 of them contain a contaminated virus in it. And this is a fact. So this virus is there and it has effects both on the plant, on the environment, and on people. And we've known that from the start. We've known it for 20 years. And nobody has stepped up to the plate to say anything.
Well, this
How corrupt can it get?
And also, plants and animals can share viruses, right?
They do.
And this gene 6 can cause deformities in the plants. It can make them yellow. It can make them less able to reproduce. So what are they doing to us if they're doing that to the plant?
Well, that's a grand experiment. You would think that when they bring something like this forward, that it would be well tested and there wouldn't be any problem because the research would be done. But it hasn't been done. And nobody's taken responsibility. And they've just assumed that the people who were involved with this had enough integrity that they wouldn't take a risk like that. But we're seeing this in things like in Roundup Ready soybeans or in something called MON 810 maize or in the NK...
Maize, that's corn.
That's corn. And the NK603 corn that we reported on ourselves that shows that it causes tumors in rats.
Horrific tumors. Huge.
Breast cancers. So why is it that we haven't seen, why hasn't this been highlighted? Why hasn't the research been done?
They should be banned until they're proven safe. I mean, what evidence suggests that they should be able to go ahead and do this without proof that they're safe? Well, I mean, that they can just go ahead and plant these and feed them to us and we don't even know if it's in our food or not because it's not labeled?
Well, I mean... You have to be a dummy to think that it's okay to eat anything that the agricultural industry wants to put on your plate because we know they don't have great integrity. We know that the pesticides that are used there are bad for us. I mean, I wouldn't go to somebody's house who was serving organic food and bring a can of Raid and start spraying it on the food. I mean, everybody'd be outraged, but if they do that when you don't see it, somehow that's okay.
Yeah, if you do it behind our backs.
No, the food that we eat, we should have the right to know everything about it. And how do we get convinced that, no, we don't need to know? No, put what you want in my food. Go ahead and change the genes. Don't worry about what it does to the environment. Don't worry about it what it does to the plants or to human beings. Just do it because that's what Monsanto and the other companies like it want to do.
You know, we vote for people to represent us. We vote for the people in Congress and so forth. And they're not taking care of us. So when we vote for people and they don't take care of us, how do we take care of ourselves when the government isn't going to even be in control, when Monsanto is going to be in control and the government can't even stop them?
Well,
what power do we have?
Well, we have the power of the individual person growing their own food to some extent.
If you can buy seeds that don't have the genetic GEs in them.
Well, that's a problem too, but you have to do the best that you can to avoid that.
Not everybody can plant their own garden, though. Not everybody has room.
That's true, but you asked what could be done. These are steps that could be done that will help a lot of people. It's like the energy crisis we have. People could get one solar panel, put it on the roof or two or whatever they can afford to try and cut down on the consumption of toxic products that come from oil. So it's a big issue that we have to pay attention to, or else we're going to be in bigger trouble than we're in. I mean, this business of not being interested in what's in our food just is as dumb as you can get.
Well, you know, I see it all over Facebook. People are complaining about it.
Well, you're talking to the educated people that are in your face group, your face group, group. But there are a lot of people who obviously were swayed by the commercials that they saw on television where doctors and other professionals were standing up and saying, you have nothing to worry about. In fact, it will be cheaper. The price of food will go up. And it's like nonsense. When you look at the risks and the potential costs that this could lead to, it's not even calculable. It's so bad.
Do you think that there's anything that can be done because it's gotten so out of hand, to recall all these genetically engineered foods and ban them until the research is done?
Well, that's what should be done. And of course, that's not what's going to be done because that's not what people are doing.
I mean, if a rat has got huge tumors bulging out of its breast.
Well, that's a bad sign, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't want to eat that corn. And I don't, you know, it's sort of like, we'll pass on the popcorn and the soy sauce. I mean, the soybeans have so much pesticides on them that they genetically engineer the soybeans so that they won't die from the amount of pesticides. And we're eating those.
Yeah, well, that's right.
And so, you know, almost every restaurant you go to, especially if it's an Asian restaurant, has soy sauce. puts it in as a seasoning and things.
Well, I think it's a sad reflection.
And it's hidden in a lot of products.
It's a very sad reflection of what's happening to our culture in so many areas. It's not just in agriculture. It's in business and law and medicine. It's in religion. It's in science. It's in sport. We're interested in ourselves. We're not so much interested in the community. It's not so much about service. And that's why things don't really change. We have revolution after revolution where we try to stop the bad things that are happening. Maybe every 10, 15, 20, or 50, or even 100 years, we have a big revolution because we can't stand it anymore and we want to stop things. And what happens is we go ahead and chop off somebody's head, and then somebody who promises to do things differently comes into office, and then 15, 20, or 30, or 50, or 100 years later, they're the ones that are going up because they're doing the same thing. Until we take personal responsibility to change this ourselves and to do the right thing and to provide service and to be caring about what's happening to other people rather than just our own financial and materialistic welfare, we're going to be in trouble.
Well, what good is all the money going to do if everybody's sick and you can't eat the food?
Well, that could happen. And you know, Mother Nature will take care of herself, and we may be the ones that get recycled here in the long haul.
I mean, like even it said in this one of these things that I was reading that even if a person, even if the crops get some sort of a plague, you still couldn't recall them. The government would still have no power over the big corporations like Monsanto.
Well, if there was any good news, it would be this. And that's that this law is only going to be effective till the end of the year. Then it has to be redrawn up again. So whatever's in it is only going to last for another 9 months. And so that's good news. But the fact that it's in there at all should be a wake-up call to us to know that things like this are happening. When we send bills to Congress and Congress reviews them and they don't have enough time to digest it, what are we talking about here? We're talking about someplace. These bills are coming into a popular review, and we're voting on them before we know what we're doing if we're in Congress, and these are the kinds of things that come out. And it's not like they're done by accident. This is done by design.
It sounds like we're losing our democracy.
Well, I mean, when you see this happening and everybody's outraged, I mean, it means something is not being done democratically. There are things being crammed into bills. They should not. Our legislation needs to change.
We should have a choice about what we eat.
Well, that's part of it. But when there's a bill that goes to Congress, it should be on one thing. It shouldn't have a bunch of trades that go in there by other people in Congress who say, yes, I'll vote for that, but you got to sneak a paragraph about this in that bill, too. And that leads to corruption, which is what we've got. We got to be honest about what we do. Things need to be transparent. And when you're looking at our health, I mean, that's the worst. I mean, we could annihilate our food production in the world, not just here, because the pollens blow all over the place. You could have one place that's genetically engineered and another place that's not next door. And by the end of 10 years, you might as well have them all be genetically engineered because it's going to go all over the place.
I know, because so far people feel if they eat organic food that it's not genetically engineered.
Right. And then you've got companies like Whole Foods coming out and saying, well, we're going to label it no matter what. And my question is why the hell is it there in the first place? Why don't you not sell that stuff?
Get it out of there. Yeah.
That's right. Because they too are interested in what? Return on investment. And as long as return on investment is king, these are the kinds of things we're going to be facing. So we got to get with it. We got to stop revolving around with revolution and start evolving with evolution to a higher level of consciousness where service becomes what we're trying to do and to do it conscientiously. Otherwise, we're right back to where we started. It's all about me, my, and mine stuff. And that doesn't work so well. Well, you've been listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuti with Nurse Vicki. It's time for Nurse Vicki's first 2020 tip on adult truths. And when we come back, we will be talking about should mammograms even be used to screen anybody? Stay tuned.
I have some adult truths because it's healthy to be able to laugh at ourselves. Sometimes, you know, I'll look down at my watch three consecutive times and I still don't know what time it is. Have you ever done that?
Yes.
And nothing
I'm not paying attention.
Nothing sucks more than the moment during an argument when you realize that you're wrong.
Mm.
I totally take back all those times I didn't want a nap when I was younger. Can you remember the last time you weren't just kind of tired? Maybe when you're trying to go to sleep. There's a great need for a sarcasm font. And how the heck are you supposed to fold a fitted sheet? You probably never tried, but I'll tell you, it's not easy.
I don't believe you.
And when you think back, was learning cursive really necessary?
You'd never know by the way I write now, I guarantee it.
You can't even read
it. I can't read
it.
My own writing.
MapQuest really needs to start their directions on number 5, don't you think?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I know how to get out of our own neighborhood.
Most of the time.
And don't you think obituaries would be a lot more interesting if they told you how the person died?
Yeah, I suppose so.
And have you noticed how bad decisions make good stories?
Indeed.
You never know when it'll strike, but there comes a moment at work when you know that you just aren't going to do anything productive for the rest of the day. Now, I'm always slightly terrified when I exit out a Word and it asks me if I want to save any changes to my 10-page technical report that I swear I didn't make any changes to.
That's right.
I also think that the freezer deserves a light as well. I mean, when I go out into the garage at night, I need a flashlight to see in the freezer.
We saved $20 to not get a light. What a dummy. I should have done it.
Is that what you did?
I don't know. It was another $50 or something. It was a big mistake because I paid for that more than $50 a lot of times.
I disagree with Kay Jewelers. I mean, I'd bet on any given Friday or Saturday night there are more kisses that begin with Miller Lite than with Kay. I have a hard time deciphering the fine line between boredom and hunger.
Mm.
Bored? Yeah. Go to the refrigerator. Anything there to entertain you?
Yeah, right.
How many times is it appropriate to say what before you just nod and smile because you still didn't hear or understand a word they said?
So true. What?
Huh? I love the sense of camaraderie when an entire line of cars teams up to prevent a jerk from cutting in at the front. Stay strong, brothers and sisters.
That's right. Don't let them in.
Shirts get dirty. Underwear gets dirty. Pants? Well, dark pants never get dirty, and you can wear them forever. Especially jeans, I've noticed, you know, and if they have tears and wrinkles and stains.
Right.
I mean, can you believe the styles? They're like $200 for a pair that I'd just throw in the trash.
You're right.
Even under ideal conditions, people have trouble locating their car keys in a pocket, finding their cell phone, pinning the tail on the donkey. But I'd bet everyone can find and push the snooze button from 3 feet away in about 1.7 seconds, eyes closed first time every time.
You're right.
The first testicular guard, the cup, was used in hockey in 1874, and the first helmet was used in 1974. That means it only took 100 years for men to realize that their brain is also important.
Come on now, Vicki. That's just mean.
Well, you know, you got to have a sense of humor.
Yeah, it might even be true.
That's why
I argue with you.
Well, it's important for people to be able to laugh at themselves, you know. That's what I think comedians get all these.
Well, they probably do. You know, I have a lot of fun with my patients, and we laugh a lot. Especially for things that are serious. And if you have a sense of humor and you can laugh at things like that, it does a lot to change the biochemistry and physiology of how we work in a very positive way.
Yeah, look at what Norman Cousins did.
Right. Whole book. That's right.
So mammograms. You know, a mammogram
here we go again.
Is turning out to be a test that is far from ideal, and it has a lot of problems. And because of the problems and the risks associated with yearly mammograms, it's now being recommended by researchers at UCSF to do them every other year now for women over 50, whether they have whether they're taking HRT or they have dense breasts or not.
That's right. That's right. Well, that's a big deal. They've got a study here with 900,000 people and an article in the journal called Internal Medicine. So we're looking at a huge study that answers a lot of the questions we have. And, you know, the more I learn about mammography, the less I'm impressed that it's a good test. And I'm not saying it can't save some lives, but this test has got real limitations.
Well, it hasn't even been proven to save lives, though, has it?
Well, yeah, I think it has. And people that are over the age of 50, it does. But it could save a lot more lives if it didn't cause problems.
So why doesn't it under 50?
Well, under 50, it creates more problems because women have dense breasts there. And when you're using a mammogram to try and find the cancer, you're looking at tissue densities that are different. And the tissue density of a cancer is about the same as the tissue density of a dense breast. So it's like flying over the North Pole looking for polar bears. You can't see it against the snow background.
Well, also they found that women who start screening that are under 40, the false positive rate is even higher.
It goes way up because their breasts are generally denser to begin with.
So they have false positives.
It's across the board.
And false positives are harmful.
Well, yes. I mean, they lead to more biopsies, to more X-rays, to do more mammograms. They lead to expensive tests like MRIs. They often lead to surgical procedures. They can lead to treatment when we make a diagnosis. Or we overtreat the so-called DCIS cancers, which we overtreat 98% of the time. The mammogram has got serious problems, and we need a better test. It's just that simple.
Well,
especially
you know, too,
since we know it causes cancer itself.
And we have a better test.
Definitely.
And we don't ever hear about it except for probably on our show.
Well, that's here and there you hear about it. But there's information about this test that's good, that's on our website. Go to drsabuto.com and put in breast thermography. And you'll learn all about what this is about. And there's a lot of literature there, and most of it's in short audios and videos, so you can learn it quite easily and quickly.
They're also referred to as mammotherms rather than mammograms.
Exactly. The problem that we have with the test is we don't have the best readers. We should have the radiologists doing that, but the radiologists are a bunch of hard-headed turkeys.
Well, they're in their comfort zone, and they don't want to go out of it.
You just said it right. They're in their comfort zone. They're opinionated about how bad a breast thermography is, and the great bulk of them don't know the first darn thing about how it works or what it does. Having an opinion when you're not knowledgeable is not scientific and it's not smart.
So somebody might want to know how to diagnose dense breasts.
Well, I mean, what they say most of the time is do a mammogram, you'll find out. Well, sure, you'll see the tissue density there, but you know,
that's when it's dangerous to do it.
Well, that's right. If you do workups on those people, you're going to cause more cancers than you would in people that don't have that. If you just feel the breast, you can tell if it's dense or not. Or a woman will tell you, you know, my breasts are painful all the time. And you know that. Yes, it's good to know if there's a dense breast. No, doing a mammogram and exposing these people to radiation is not a good idea.
And like you said, too, with these false positives, it leads to a lot more tests and things, and it's very stressful. In 10 years, over 50% of yearly mammograms without cancer are recalled for more studies, which include more mammograms.
Right, and more cost and more morbidity and more overtreatment. I mean, this is a test that needs to go away. There may be a time or two when a mammogram is a smart thing to do, but we ought to be bringing breast thermography forward. We should be looking at ultrasounds more often.
And at least doing them every other year reduces it by a third.
Well, now, see, that's a big change. When the United States Preventive Services Task Force back in 2009 reviewed this whole topic, they advised that women start screening for mammography every other year at age 50, not every year at age 40 or before that. And for people who have dense breasts and are taking hormone replacement therapy, that turns out to be a safe thing to do. So here we are with a test that needs to be reassessed. New technologies need to be brought forward. We ought to get our radiologists engaged in doing the reading because, let's face it, they're the best trained people to do this. And that comes with education. But when you've got this bias, which they have, it leads to having opinions when you don't know all the facts. And that's a dangerous thing. Well, it's time for a network station break. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health, and I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. We'll be right back with more Prescriptions for Health Radio, and we'll be talking about should cognitive-enhancing drugs be given to our kids to make them get better grades. Oy vey. So stay tuned. We'll be back soon. Welcome back to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Lynn Saputo here with Nurse Vicki.
We finally got some backing on our opinion about drugs that boost memory in healthy children.
This is unbelievable.
American neurologists agree at last that prescribing drugs to boost cognitive function and memory and thinking in healthy kids is misguided. So what took so long?
These are the ADD drugs. It's like, hello, they're saying they're not well, they haven't been studied well enough to give to healthy kids. Well, how the hell well enough have they been studied to give to kids that aren't healthy?
Well, you know, there's a trend for kids to take these drugs before school exams. And then when ADHD hasn't even been diagnosed properly with clinical findings, it's just a misuse of medications and it's not justifiable.
Well, I mean, look at what's happening. We got parents going to the pediatrician saying, kids aren't doing great in school. They're not getting that 4.2 average so they can go to some fancy college. And that becomes the biggest thing in life. And is it? I mean, what's important for a
kid? Well, and then kids sell them to each other, too.
Well, you know? They get addicted, and they make money from it, and they're misused, and even and they're misused when they're given for that reason. And even the neurologists now have published this article in their big journal called Neurology saying that this shouldn't be done anymore. Well, why the heck was it done in the first place? You got to look back and wonder, what were the doctors thinking? What were the kids thinking? And the teachers and the students. Anybody ask the students? They're the ones that are just supposed to produce and get good grades. And what about the rest of their life?
Well, we talked to a girl that was taking them for a while, and she said she quit because they made her feel weird.
Oh, well.
But then there are other people that like to feel weird, I guess.
Well.
But I think that this is a good time to point out how ADD and ADHD are diagnosed.
Well, that's right. You got a kid that's disruptive. That doesn't listen, that is not doing well in school. What's the reason for that? Do we just assume that we're going to give them some kind of drug that's going to take care of their symptoms? Or are we going to look at and talk to the kid and talk to the parents and see what the issues are in their life?
Because, you know, it could be something like not getting enough sleep or not eating a healthy diet, not exercising enough, not having good study habits, maybe undergoing a lot of stress in their lives. All those will affect your concentration.
Well, I think that the stress is the big thing. I mean, do you know any families that are not dysfunctional?
Or kids that aren't stressed in school?
Well, I mean, there's stress every place. And what happens is kids have unrealistic expectations put on them by their parents. I mean, even when it comes to sports, you look at parents at a soccer game and they're biting their nails and they're chewing on pieces of toothpicks and they're so worried about their kid not making a goal or becoming some kind of star. And what does that do to the kid? I mean, it should be no strange thing that they act out. And a lot of the kids that have the so-called ADD or ADHD are put on all these drugs when they don't need that at all. What they need is to be understood and listened to.
Okay, now I want us to bring up and talk about what clinical findings means. Like, for example, part of the diagnosis is if they're not coordinated. In other words, if they can't catch a ball very well, if they have night blindness, if they have extra dry skin, if they have concentrated urine. And then there are some other tests that can be done with SPECT scans and essential fatty acid profiles.
That's
and
right.
Functional MRIs.
That's right.
These are things that need to be done before you consider putting your kid on a medication.
I think you should give a talk to the American Academy of Pediatrics, Vicki.
Why don't you do it?
Well, I mean, the point is that you're a nurse and you know this and you've studied it and you've got a brain in your head and you're logical. And you understand what's happening.
But
our
a lot
kids
of people
are
close
over-treated.
To it. They don't want to hear it.
Well, the teachers want a kid that's quiet, right? The parents don't want to hear about teachers complaining.
They want their kids to get good
the
grades.
The doctors don't want to have to figure out what's going on with psychotherapy. So give a drug. You know, it'll quiet them down, even though it's an upper.
But you know what's also surprising is that long-term health and safety of these neuroenhancers haven't even been studied in children.
No, that's right.
And when you think about it, like with essential fatty acids, those are healthy. Those are good for the brain. Those help children that do have the problem or children that don't have the problem that want to do better in school.
Well, it might help them.
There's no risks with those.
Well, the point you're making here is a good one, and that there is a reason why kids get ADD and ADHD, a lot of the time it's because the metabolism of their essential fatty acids is all screwed up. And what I mean by that is they may be taking in the essential fatty acids in their diet in the form of seeds and nuts and different foods. But the problem is that they can't metabolize the alpha-linolenic acid on the omega-3 side and the gamma-linolenic acid on the, or the linoleic acid on the omega-6 side, because they don't have the enzymes to convert them into the active ingredients that lead to the syndrome that we're talking about, where they're hyperactive, they're having problems controlling them because they have outbursts, they have a problem with coordination because they can't catch a ball right, they're dyslexic a lot of the time, and as you said, they have night blindness a lot of the time. They have concentrated urine and they have dry skin because they don't have the waterproofing of the skin. I know Vicki mentioned all this, but it's important. And these are the things that make for the clinical diagnosis in a much more solid way than just talking to a teacher that's upset because the kid's having outbursts and the parent's upset because the teacher's going to them, et cetera, et cetera. This is stuff that's serious. And to put a kid on a drug for 5, 10, 15, 20 years or even a lifetime and create lots of potential problems. I mean, I have a patient now who is on Medicare that's been on these drugs his whole life. And he's now so addicted to it, we can't get him off. And this person never had a problem to start with, in my opinion. He's a genius and a multimillionaire.
What happens if he gets off of it?
He gets tired and weak, and he can't think, and he feels he has to go to bed because his body's used to being revved up all the time to a normal place. So he's compensated for that. And then you go back, and you try and take him off of it, and he says, I can't do it. I've tried to taper off. He can't. And what's he suffered from? Atrial fibrillation. Because this causes atrial fibrillation when you do it for a long time in a lot of people. So do you really want to do that or increase the risk for seizures or some of the other problems that you get into with these addictive drugs? I mean, it's they're not a good idea except for when the diagnosis has been established after a careful investigation.
I think this might be a good place to talk about what happened with this Dr. Joseph Biederman at Harvard.
Well, that shows you how
far things get out of hand. When we talk about conflicts of interest.
Well, see, this is a pediatrician who's like a psychiatrist, actually, who was trying to say that kids that had ADD really had a much more serious condition. They were manic depressive, and it was a form of that. And so he wanted to give them antipsychotic drugs, and what it turned out
on top of it.
Yeah, well, or that instead of, because he thought that's what they really need. But what he turned out to have was a very healthy financial relationship with the pharmaceutical companies, who gave him a lot of money to build an institute right there at Harvard, and some money because he would be promoting a lot of business for them. But he got caught. And you see this in healthcare a lot of the time, where there are conflicts of interest, where people are doing things for the wrong reasons. I mean, these kids don't all have that problem. They don't even have what they're told they have by flimsy evidence, that which would be the ADD or ADHD. And then to take it a step further and give these drugs to healthy kids who, because they will get better grades in school, is giving them a wrong message. I mean, yeah. Life is more than good grades in school.
I remember one time having a conversation with a parent that gave these to their kids.
Oh, I know.
Before finals.
Yeah, right.
And then I heard other kids complain, and they say, well, it puts us at a disadvantage unless we take them too. So it's kind of like, so then one kid gets a prescription, and then they start selling or giving them to their friends.
Yeah, well, does your kid really have to get a 4.2 or a 4.5? I mean, I struggled to get a 3 when I was in high school because I was doing other things too. And when I got to college, I got a 3. When I got to medical school, I got a 3. And it's only after that that I've gotten a 4.
Yeah, you're it's because a 4 now.
Well, it's because I really enjoy what I'm doing and I'm motivated to do it. Anyway, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuti here with Nurse Vicki, and it's time for Nurse Vicki's final 2020 tip on Murphy's Other Laws. And when we come back, we'll be talking about what's the best way to manage cartilage tears and what is the optimal pre-surgical diet. So stay tuned.
Murphy's Other Laws. Actually, they're kind of like Confucius say. Light travels faster than sound. This is why some people appear bright until you hear them speak. A fine is a tax for doing wrong. A tax is a fine for doing well.
Mm.
He who laughs last thinks slowest. So you better laugh fast when you hear these.
That's right.
A day without sunshine is like, well, night.
That's great.
Change is inevitable, except from a vending machine.
That's true.
Those who live by the sword get shot by those who don't. The 50-50-90 rule. Anytime you have a 50-50 chance of getting something right, there's a 90% probability that you'll get it wrong. It is said that if you line up all the cars in the world end to end, someone from California would try to pass them.
It's probably true.
Well, not me. I'm from California. If the shoe fits, get another one just like it.
That's a good idea.
The things that come to those who wait may be the things left by those who got there first. Give a man a fish and he'll eat for a day. Teach a man to fish and he'll sit in a boat all day drinking beer.
True.
A flashlight, a case for holding dead batteries. God gave you toes as a device for finding furniture in the dark.
That's true.
And last but not least, when you go into court, you're putting yourself in the hands of 12 people who weren't smart enough to get out of jury duty.
Isn't that right? That's great.
Well, anyhow, you know, a lot of adults are developing disabling knee pain due to a tear in the meniscus or the cartilage in their knee, often due to osteoarthritis, but not always. Now, new research shows that physical therapy can often bring about similar improvements in physical function and pain as arthroscopic surgery does. How can this be?
Well, I mean, you have to think about what the causes are here. If you have osteoarthritis, it means most of the cartilage is being destroyed. And when it's being destroyed, it's thin and there's not much there. So you're going to see in those people small cartilages and the tears are going to be issues sometimes and not others. But when you have a lot of cartilage there, there's a tear and there's a lump there, which I can tell you I've had, it's a whole different story. There you're really looking at a surgical approach to things.
Well, I thought it was interesting that physical therapy can work as well as an arthroscopy. So would you explain why that works?
Well, it's just an outcome study. What they did is they followed a lot of patients, and 351 patients over the age of 45 who had pain and a tear and some osteoarthritis. And after a year, a third of those people who were in the group that got physical therapy decided to have surgery because they weren't getting better. And what was left, the other two-thirds of that group, did just as well as the people who had had the surgery to start with. And by surgery, I mean arthroscopy.
So do you think what happens is that the physical therapy is keeping the range of motion while the tear just heals itself?
Yeah, we used to think that the tears couldn't heal themselves, but they can. They're not very vascular, which means that you can't provide a lot of nutrients to the cartilage itself. But you can, over time, it can be, it does happen. And a lot of the time when you first tear it, there's swelling. And when there's swelling and inflammation, that tear will bulge. And then if it's sticking out into the joint, every time the weight comes down on top of it, it's going to hurt. If you stay off of it, you do physical therapy to rehab it, over time, that's going to heal a lot of the time as the swelling goes down.
And doesn't the photon stimulator help when there's swelling and...
Photon stimulator does a lot. What you don't want to do, and something we reported on some time ago, is put an injection of cortisone in there. Because when you do that, what happens is you reduce the inflammation for sure. And that's a good thing in the short term, but in the long haul, it also retards healing. So it slows down the healing process. The infrared light is a totally different story. It speeds up healing, and it also reduces inflammation. And it does it every bit as well as a steroid injection in my experience. So it's a beautiful tool. It's non-invasive that avoids a lot of surgeries. I know people come to me all the time and their knee hurts and they want to know if they should go see the orthopedist and should they be thinking about things like a knee replacement or arthroscopy. And the answer is, let's try some light first. And a lot of those people, two or three treatments, their symptoms are gone.
Wow. But what if they have osteoarthritis and it's bone on bone?
Then it becomes more of a problem, but that can heal too. And that may be a time when you try something like Synvisc, which is that hyaluronan that we can inject that lubricates joints. and that can improve the symptoms that are there. I've seen a lot of people get that injection and do well.
Wow.
The problem is that over time, a lot of people get allergic to it. When you inject that into the joint and you're allergic to it, you wish you'd never seen it. So there are lots of ways to look at what you can do.
You know, there was another study recently that talked about platelet-rich plasma for a tennis elbow.
Yeah.
And it sounds like this could help with the knee problems also.
It's used for that. I know doctors who do that. And it's an okay approach to take, but it's not that powerful.
Well, let's talk about what it does. Why would this even work?
Well, what they're doing is they're centrifuging out the platelets and getting them concentrated.
In your own blood.
Yeah, from your own blood. So you're getting nothing that you can get allergic to from that point of view. But what they do is they inject this in, and it has a lot of growth factors in it, not growth hormone itself, but other growth factors that spur tissue to recover. And you see some of these people getting better. So when you're looking at these people, say, after 24 weeks, that's after about 6 months, 71% of the people who were in the treatment group that got the platelet-rich plasma had a nice response, as opposed to 56% of the people who were in the control group. So you're looking at a difference of not that much, you know, the difference between 56 and 71, so you're about 15% better is all. But it's not the cheapest thing in the world. So it's one more thing to keep in your armamentarium.
Well, you know, before a person does resort to surgery, and arthroscopy is a form of surgery.
It absolutely is.
It's good to know about these alternatives, because that should be the order of things, really. Before before you start considering doing the arthroscopy or a total knee replacement, in the case when there is the bone-on-bone, to try some of these other things. Like maybe ask your doctor about this platelet-rich plasma.
That'd be one of the back-end things, I think.
And the photon stimulator. But there's
acupuncture, the photon stimulator nobody knows about, unfortunately. But the infrared light therapy, and I encourage you all, go to drsaputo.com. Put infrared light therapy in the search box, and back will come all these articles in audio and video that Vicki and I have made that are short and right to the point. They'll explain to you how it works and why it's so smart and the mechanism of action.
And then there are other things like chiropractic.
Could be very good, because why do you get these things often in the first place? It's because you're misaligned. And a misalignment in your neck can cause a problem in your foot.
Really?
Absolutely. If you have a TMJ problem, you could wind up with a disc, or a problem with a knee that leads to osteoarthritis or leads to cartilage tears. So alignment's a big deal. I love to get a consultation from a chiropractor for almost all of my patients who have musculoskeletal pain, because they're helpful. And then we add these other technologies to them, and we get even better care.
And acupuncture is good for a lot of things besides pain.
And they can be done in combination. You know, you can do chiropractic, acupuncture, a little body work and physical therapy, use the infrared light therapy, and I'd say 80 to 90% of people with knee problems are going to get better. There's always going to be that group that's got advanced disease that doesn't get better, that's very concerned about getting rid of their pain. But it's good to be
physical,
patient.
So besides physical therapy, you could try all these other things before resorting to going under the knife.
Oh, for sure. That's how we do things where I work at the Health Medicine Center in Walnut Creek, California, because we have a pain management group that does complementary alternative approaches together. So it's a team approach. It's not just like the orthopedist does everything. We try to stay away from them, because their expertise is in what? Surgery. So I'd rather stick with people who do the other kinds of treatments that are less invasive, that are safer, you know, don't lead to a surgery that can be complicated by a failure of the surgery. For example, I had an arthroscopy in my left knee about, I don't know, 20 years ago, and the next day I was fine. I was walking around, and a couple of days later I was playing tennis.
But not with the second one.
The second one I had on the other knee, and these were both big cartilage tears, and they weren't going to get better, and the knee was locked in position. It took 2 years. Because it kept bleeding, and then there was scarring, and it was
fluid drained out.
It was a mess. So it's, you know, you pay your nickel, take your chances. But if you're smart, you're going to do it the safe way rather than jumping in and doing something that's aggressive, because you don't have the patience to wait. I wait at least 3 to 6 months before I recommend surgery to my patients for this, unless it's just outright obvious. And sometimes it is. And if you do an MRI of that knee and you find out that there's a huge tear, you probably need to have it taken out. You have to be reasonable about picking your choices.
Well, here's a topic that many people probably haven't thought about. In fact, I think a lot of the surgeons probably haven't thought about it. But the trauma to fat when cutting through it during surgery to get to the organ to be operated on can result in inflammation as well as decreased hormone synthesis, among other things. So let's start out with talking about some of the functions of fat in our body.
Well, fat does a lot of things. And you'd think it's just something that has calories, that's for storage.
That's ugly.
Yeah. it does do that, and we do need it. But it has a lot of other hormones and nutrients that it makes, like leptin, which is what regulates your appetite. When you eat, leptin is released from fat cells, and the fat cells turn off your brain in your hypothalamus from feeling hungry. Interleukin 6 and TNF-alpha are both inflammatory molecules that cause swelling and inflammation. There's something called adiponectin there that's in fat. That's your friend. It tends to protect against inflammation and protect against getting heart disease. And it regulates, fat regulates your immunity, your reproduction, glucose metabolism, tumor development, so many things. So how
do researchers recommend we protect our bodies against the stress of an operation then?
Well, I mean, they're silly. What they're saying is don't eat fat for a while, and that will do something that's really going to reduce inflammation some. And that's true. I mean, that would be one thing to think about. But, I mean, wouldn't it make more sense to have a conversation with your surgeon and say, hey, you know this stuff that you're cutting across, this fat that you don't care about because it doesn't bleed and you don't know much about what it does, just go ahead and chop it up. I mean, they cut right through it. No, they don't care. How about being a surgeon and dissecting those tissues apart so you don't lyse those fat cells and release those hormones that are going to screw up your immunity?
When you say dissect it, now, meaning to do it with your hands, for them to do it with their hands,
yes,
rather than to cut through it?
Exactly.
Because usually when I think of dissecting, I think of cutting something.
Yeah, no, this is not cutting and trying to separate the tissues by moving them around.
So that's possible to do, is to split the...
It is, but they didn't see any reason to do it because it was just something in the way. So you just cut through it, get rid of it, get to where you're going, and get your job done.
Yeah, I think that it depends. When a surgeon is rough with a patient, even though they're under an anesthesia, it makes a lot of difference in their recovery.
Just
like when you get an anesthesia. I always like to tell people to talk to the anesthesiologist and tell them when they put that tube in your throat to do it gently, because otherwise people have a sore throat and it affects them for a week.
It can be a real problem. I mean, the things that we do, because we're not the ones who are the culprits, the ones that are, we're not the people who are in charge of what's happening. We can't control it. And when you don't know any better because you don't understand what's happening, it's even worse. I mean, why do you think we did so many appendectomies?
I know. Just while they're already in there, take it out.
And it turns out we need it. And it was the same thing with other things. And people were taking out gallbladders and doing things like that. So it's not really something that we should be taking in a cavalier sort of way and not worrying about.
You know, these researchers, they didn't address healthy fats, and they just talked about what they call the typical Western high-fat diet and not the quality of the fats.
Well, that's right.
And, you know, there are fats that heal and fats that kill,
that's
as Udo Erasmus talks about.
Mm-hmm.
So what type of a diet do you recommend in preparation for surgery?
You need the best nutrition you can get. So the best thing you can do? Juice. You know, if you want to get 5, 10 pounds, 15 pounds of vegetables in you, you can't eat all that. Juice it and make sure you're eating enough of the fiber as well. Have a balanced diet. Make sure you're getting those essential fatty acids. Take a probiotic, because very often what happens is people are getting bowel problems. Anyway, at the end of the show, so I want to remind you that we'll be back to talk about what's new in the news and health the first and third Monday morning of every month on PRN.FM and DrSaputo.com from 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time and 7 to 8 a.m. Pacific Time. Prescriptions for Health will also be available 24/7 on PRN.FM.
And if you enjoyed today's show and you'd like to have more information on the topics we discussed, go to Dr. Saputo Radio on DrSaputo.com and check out our Fast Track videos. And remember, a healthy lifestyle is the most powerful healer in the universe. So if you want to be well, pay attention to the style in which you live your life.
Have a great week. We'll see you next time.